You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, brought to you by themortgagewarrior.com. Use home equity to reduce stress today. Call Steve at themortgagewarrior.com. It could save you thousands.
Never filtered. Always fun.
Did you see Nicole Kidman pretend like she knew how to clap?
What was she going into baby seal mode? What was that?
That was really strange.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Scott MacArthur in for Brian Hayes. Jonah Siegel in for Jamie Noodles McLennan. Jeff O'Dog O'Neill is here. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050. Bobby Mack a little bit later on in the hour. Our three stars as well. But let's kick this thing right off. The president of the Toronto Raptors, Masai Ujiri, is on the phone. Masai, thanks for taking some time. How are you?
What's going on, guys? How are you? Thanks for having me.
Well, we're doing well. What do you make of last night's game? Let's start there. I mean, disappointing really from start to finish. Is your team with the new pieces, Ibaka and Tucker in particular, and Lowry being out, is still figuring out the chemistry here?
Yeah, I think still figuring out the chemistry. And honestly, I feel one of those bad games, you know, like where you didn't quite have any energy. I think everybody felt it. It was almost like, okay, when are we going to start going? And it never kind of started, almost. It was just one of those games. Also, you know, the timetable of when you get guys like that, players like that in a trade, to be honest, it's why I'm not big on the trade deadline. I like training camp, starting things all over, you know, like from the start, everybody in it. But I also understand, you know, why we needed to do this at this time. So it's going to take a while, you know, especially with Kyle out, you know, and then when Kyle comes back, we have to refigure again, you know, but that's pro basketball. We're not complaining and we're not bitching about anything. This is just the life of pro sports and what we need to do.
Well, Masai, you mentioned, you know, that it's going to take a while and you don't have, obviously, a lot of time. I wondered how you see the fit playing out between Serge Ibaka and Jonas Valanciunas. Can you see a long-term fit between the two of those guys?
I can, 100%. You know, I think, but it's going to be one of those where we wanted to kind of cut out all the excuses, you know, with our team. We needed a power forward. We haven't had one starting power forward for very long. No offense to Patrick. He's fit right in, and he's been one of our better players, a ball mover, a three-point shooter and defender, and a leader on the court, and a leader in our culture, what we're trying to set here. But where we're trying to go now is, you know, here are the parts that are missing. You know, like if we have to play small, we can play small. If we have to play big, we can play big. For every position, you kind of want a backup player that's capable of playing. We wanted to fill all those gaps, you know, and do we have top 10 players in the league in every position? No, we don't, you know, like, but I think getting a guy like Serge Ibaka, who is a power forward, that's his position, can play some center, can stretch the floor, can protect the rim, you know, we feel that, you know what, it was the best that we could possibly do. And then getting a guy like Tucker, who can add some toughness, a little bit of three-point shooting and defense especially, which we had struggled with for a little bit there. Then we see how we can tighten up a little bit.
We're with the president of the Toronto Raptors, Masai Ujiri, on Overdrive, TSN 1050.
Well, Masai, you mentioned there filling a couple needs. Did you feel at all with your group maybe around late December that started kind of, I don't know if infecting the room is the right way to put it, but did you feel that, you know, some of your players were waiting for a move like this to happen and you kind of needed to act at some point?
No, because we've always been looking, to be honest, there's no, in the business and in basketball, there's no right time, you know, like the guys that had, so the team that had Serge before, they're trying to win, they're trying to figure out their team and they're trying to get to a place where and they figure out, okay, should we move the guy or should we not? You know, like, so the life in the NBA is not dependent on the Toronto Raptors, you know, like, and to say, hey, yeah, okay, our players want us to make a move, we can't go make it today, or we need new players and we can't go get it today. It's just not how it works. We've been planning this. You guys know it, that we tried to get him in the summer, but timing is one thing in the NBA. You know, you have to get that right. So we were trying. The timing, you know, like just happened to occur. Hopefully with Serge, it was right before the deadline. We were able to get it done a week before, and then Tucker came at the last minute. So we saw it. We see our team. We've had a couple of bad breaks, injuries, Patrick Patterson, DeMar. And then, you know, every team goes through a period where you're not playing so well. That all stormed in at the same time for us, where we were going through a little slump, a couple of injuries. And obviously, it's not excuses. The game yesterday is not an excuse, you know, but it's an 82-game season. And honestly, we're not going to win every single game.
But would there be a point along the way, Masai, where you would communicate maybe to DeMar or Kyle, you know, we're trying to address that need? Does that need to be said at any point?
Yeah, whether it's said or not, you know, like we communicate very well with those guys. You know, they're great stars to have on your team. You know, they're very good to have. But one thing we should know. I remember George Karl used to come to my office every preseason and right before the season starts, and he would say, the number is 8 this year. And I say, George, what is 8 this year? And he says, not the number of times I'm going to mess up with the media or going to say something in the media where you're going to get mad at me or you're going to scold me for. So what my point to you is, these guys talk to your media every single day. And sometimes, you know, like after a loss, or their frustrations are going to show. And, you know, like it happens to all of us, and they're going to say things. And at the time, you know, like they were right. You know, like, did we need something new? Did we need a change? You know, at some point we needed to do something, you know, and at that time it came out of frustration for them, and they said it, you know, but we move on. We all know that we're all trying to do the best for our ball club.
With Masai Ujiri, president of the Raptors, and I mean, players in this day and age, Masai, they make a ton of money. The NBA is a league full of stars, and we know that. How important is it for you to communicate with the likes of Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, or whomever? I mean, you're managing different types of personalities. Not that you're keeping them in the loop looking for feedback necessarily, or feel like you're forced to make a move based on anything that they say, but how important is the behind-the-scenes, the private communication with your players in this day and age?
Oh, it's very important, you know, like because they're playing a lot of games, and you have to figure out a way to know the character and the personalities of the players on your team, whether it's Kyle Lowry or DeMar, or even if you want to talk about lower level guys or younger guys, I should say. We have to be in constant communication, where you're not giving them too much information in terms of, because our business sometimes is tough, you know, like you could be leading, there's 100 trades, 100 changes you talk about, and then maybe one happens, you know, like, so if you go and you're promising or you're saying these kind of things, you know, to players, or saying that this could, I think our communication is more of the culture of our team and where we're going and what we're trying to do and where we're trying to improve and all the winning tendencies, winning culture and winning ways that we have to build a ball club and those leadership, those are the things that you talk about with these guys in terms of team improvement and all of that. We just have to be careful, because sometimes, you know, like you think you have a deal, you think you have a way of improving your team, and you know what, it doesn't happen. You know, I don't want to be somebody that fake promises.
Masai, Kyle Lowry's undergone his wrist surgery. Do you have a sense of when he's going to be back? Like, would you be confident that he can be back in time for the playoffs, maybe even before?
I'm hoping. Well, I'm hoping, you know, with these things, you know, like they give a time frame sometimes of whether it's 4 to 6 or 7 weeks, you know, like, and all that falls hopefully like right before at worst, and maybe before if we're lucky, you know, like, and we want Kyle to, you know, like, long term just to be good, and he had those debris floating in his wrist, which have been cleaned up successfully, and hopefully he begins to feel better, and it works out, and that he gets back on the court, because there's nobody that wants to get back on the court more than Kyle.
When was the point, Masai, when you realized this was worse than you thought with Kyle?
You know, so it's one of those injuries, you know, and we've had this. I'm not allowed to talk about ex-players and players that have been here, but we had this with a player on our team before with his ankle. And to be honest, when people were making all the noise of why did Kyle play in the All-Star and all that crap, you know, like maybe it needs to be explained better, you know, like, so you have these debris and loose bodies in your in his wrist, and they float around, you know, like, and some bigger than others, and sometimes they get stuck in the joint, they lodge in the joints, you know, and they make you're very uncomfortable. He can't move his wrist back all the way, and then sometimes, you know, like with a hit or something, it dislodges again, and it goes to a position where they go to a position where you actually feel better, and or sometimes it goes to a position where you have swelling, you know, and this changes with Talem and Kyle. Would feel differently every single time. You know, sometimes his wrist felt better, and sometimes it didn't. Sometimes it was swollen. I'll give you an example. The day before the surgery, and the day before he had surgery, we thought, you know, this thing is going really well. The swelling had subsided, and I was going down. And then all of a sudden, the next day, even without being hit or without any contact, it flared up again. You know, so this is the feeling that he is going through this whole time, whether it's All-Star or whenever. So I don't know that there was any point in time. It really hits you when they say, okay, you know, like he's making a decision, or we're making a decision collectively that, you know what, he has to have surgery. And then you start thinking of time frame and all of that. But if there's anybody that can fight it, is the guy we know. You know, he's the toughest guy in the NBA, in my opinion.
So it wasn't something then, obviously, while the All-Star break is happening, where you're thinking in the back of your head, you know, there might be something there. It's kind of something that develops and flares up, I guess, is the way to put it.
Well, it'll come and go, you know, like, I know in his mind, he thought it would get better, you know, like in our mind, until you start, after we did tests and MRIs and all of that, where you see the bone and you see this different debris and loose bodies, and the doctor tells us, you know what, he has to go in and clean them out. And that's when the decision was made.
Thanks for this, Masai. All the best the rest of the way. Big one tomorrow night in Washington. We'll be watching.
I appreciate you. Thank you guys for having me.
You bet. President of the Toronto Raptors, Masai Ujiri. And they're just going to, I mean, Jonas, honestly, they're just going to have to figure out a way to get by in the absence of Lowry.
Well, they can. Like, they have.
They've got depth.
They have depth. And they need Corey Joseph to play better than he has for most of the year. And they're right there. With Washington, they're a little bit further behind of Boston, but they've got opportunity to kind of get themselves in a better spot, and they want to be top three.
Him and Sam Mitchell both defended Lowry going to the All-Star game, where I think if Raptors fans are like, if you knew there was something wrong with it, why wouldn't you just immediately get it?
But did his explanation sway you?
No.
Well, I mean, why would you take
the
chance?
It's more on Kyle Lowry saying, I'm fine, I'm going to the All-Star game, and then he came back and said, well, I'm actually not. Played a round of golf, played in the All-Star game now. But probably could have been done 11 days, 10 days earlier.
Yeah. Problem is, I mean, if they end up 4-5 and they get past whoever they play in the first round, they'll have Cleveland in the second round instead of the Eastern Final, which
may not matter. Like, if you're going to beat them, you're going to have to beat them anyway.
Yeah, if you're not going to win at all, who cares when you're out? If you're out, you're out.
Yeah, well, they're going to have to run into the Cavs at some point. I think we all know that if they're going to do anything in these playoffs. Bobby Mack will join us on the other side. We'll get to the three stars before the 7 o'clock hour as well. And just remember, the Leafs and Kings are on TSN 1050 tonight hour and a half pregame coverage right up O-Dog's alley starting at 9 o'clock with the Tapman and Patrick O'Sullivan, and a puck drop at 10:30 with Bonesy and Ralphie. Bobby Mack is next. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050. Getting Bobby Mack in studio here in just a couple of minutes. Leafs and Kings tonight, 9 o'clock pregame, 10:30 puck drop. Big 2 points on the line, because O-Dog, you were saying it earlier, and they can't swing and miss on this road trip.
It's at that point where a 10-day stretch of losses is out.
And regulation time L's especially.
Oh, yeah. And everybody said, you know, Brian touched on it, and I don't necessarily agree. Anaheim, L.A., and San Jose scare the hell out of me still. Because Brian's point was, Anaheim's not what they used to be. But they still got some talent there. They're pretty damn, I don't care who's in net for them. And they play good at home.
They're a Western Conference playoff team right now.
Also, LA,
the Kings are desperate. I mean, they got 2 points is huge for them.
San Jose's also still really good.
Yeah, they are good.
They're sneaky good. Yeah.
Didn't L.A. come in here this year and whoop their ass?
7-0.
So maybe that's not a matchup. We'll find out tonight, but they got to go home with something.
That reminds me, I had something to ask you.
Me?
Yeah, it was about, so Brent Burns, we all agree, is going to win the Norris, right?
I don't even think it's, there's right. no it's not bigger a race. Slam dunk.
What effect do you think it has, though, that Drew Doughty plays, let's just use him as an example because the Leafs are in California. He plays like 3-4 minutes more per game. I think it's like three. Over a season, that's a lot more ice time.
Brent Burns plays three to four more?
Less. Like, does that mean anything to you?
Absolutely not. It's been one of the nerdiest takes I've ever heard in my life. It's all about what you do.
It adds up to like six more games or something, like full games. It's a lot more ice time. I just think you have to consider that in terms of like evaluating the season. No.
If somebody came on the radio for an hour and a half after us and just sat there and picked his ass and did nothing.
Because that's what Drew Doughty's doing?
Well, no, come but on. That it's just like, would you say, oh, wow, look at the amount of time that guy's been on the radio.
But
nobody
it's harder.
Cares.
It's harder to play more minutes. Okay.
Well, it's also maybe a necessity because of...
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's a harder response.
Well, yeah,
it's more responsibility.
Hard to ignore what Burns is doing, though.
I know. It's a lot of points. Although people were willing to ignore it last year when Erik Karlsson had 82 points.
So. They were making a lot more fuss of Brent Burns this year than they were than Karlsson last year. That's
sure. The Canadian city bias. Right, Bob? Isn't it fair?
It's a good question. Yeah, that was a little Drew Doughty, Pierre LeBrun love affair. I'm jumping into the middle of this, so I don't know what you guys
are talking
about. Well,
Drew Doughty did exactly what Joe Thornton did this year. There was a big hype, Drew Doughty last year, coming through the Canadian cities about how it's his year to win the Norris, this, and he better start getting some consideration. And guess what Joe Thornton did this year in Toronto? He started, Brent Burns isn't just the best defenseman. He's the best player in the league.
Yeah, and the numbers are off the charts, and you're right. And I think there was a sense, too, and a little bit, that Burns is he's such a big man, and he crushes people. And even though he's probably, some would say, you know, he's really good offensively, obviously, and the goal totals are bigger. I you know, comparatively,
he's almost at 30.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just the overwhelming volume. I think there is a little bit of difference between Burns and the Burns Karlsson analogy from Karlsson getting snubbed last year on a similar type year. Similar, yes, but he doesn't have the same physical dimension that Burns can exhibit, because for as big and as physical as he can be at times, he also can be really erratic defensively, same as Karlsson. And some people are going to say it's the goal totals and the fact that, you know, he at the time the most of the Burns hype started, he was threatening to pass Crosby and McDavid for the overall lead in points, and, you know, he's on his way to 30 goals.
Bobby, yeah. Is there even a name that could compete with Brent Burns for the Norris Trophy?
Not right even close.
Like, Not right now. Is there even a name you can
Not right now, I wouldn't think so. I'd have to look at maybe Erik Karlsson.
Who's having a much different type of
much
year.
Much different type year. Yeah. But, yeah, I think, you know, Carlson's always going to be in the conversation for me. I'm not one of those people who said, oh, he's bad enough defensively and he just overwhelms you with the points. I think he's one of the very best defensemen in the National Hockey League.
Well, what do you think it says that I think it was only 2013-14 that Burns was still playing some wing?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. You know, he's not a late bloomer per se, but he's, in terms of becoming this, you know, overwhelming force, he is a late bloomer to that extent. I mean, and that's why he got rewarded with the contract that he got. San Jose traditionally doesn't give anything over 5 years. Hmm. And now they gave, what was it, an 8-year deal to a 31-year-old who's going to be 32 this year.
Do you think yesterday will ever be a day with more activity? Or is it just the good players get locked up?
Big bottle of ketchup here. That's active.
That's ridiculous.
I know, but we love it. You know what? Yeah. People are saying, well, this is what happens when you got a salary cap. And it's true to a degree. But we've had some big days in the salary cap era on trade deadline.
Well, we had a big 22 minutes here one afternoon. Scotty was in here hosting for Hayes.
Last June.
Yeah. And it didn't happen at the deadline. And then that's because I think there's more financial flexibility for teams in the summer than there is right now. But the problem is the flat cap is the problem. You know, if teams knew that, you know, for a while there we were looking, it was like $4 or $5 million a year it was going up. We thought this was right before Taves and Kane signed their extensions in Chicago. We were all like, hey, by the time those guys' extensions are over, whatever they get their deal, we might be at $100 million cap. And that's why, you know, initial asks were probably up around $12, $13 million for those guys because they thought, you know, I got to guard myself against the fact if this salary cap keeps going up the way it's been going up, it's not going to be long before we're at $95, $100 million for the salary cap, so I should be making $12, $13, $14 million. And then all of a sudden it's been going up a little tiny increments, barely going up, and it shouldn't be going up at all. But the PA and the league keep having to put the 5% inflator in just so they don't crush whoever's in free agency that on July 1. But the more they put the inflator in, the more escrow is going up, and everybody hates escrow. And so now teams are so up against the cap, and they're saying, and guess what? It doesn't get any better next year. I got some expiring contracts, but I've also got some guys to sign. I'm still in salary cap hell. It's never getting better. Whereas teams were getting $4 and $5 million a year bumps in the salary cap as get out of jail free cards.
With Bob McKenzie, and our Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance It. We'll come back to our Colt Hockey poll question on Twitter, Bob. And this one has stumped all of us. So we're going to see if he can solve
it
for us.
Not lucky you didn't answer for me then.
Which Atlantic Division team improved the most at the NHL trade deadline? Florida, Montreal, Toronto, or Ottawa? O-Dog wants a neither or a none. We'll also give you another if you want. You want to go there? We didn't throw Tampa Bay in.
Okay, but now we got. Now I got to ask for context in the question. What's the definition of improved the most? Is it for the balance of this season? Like something something that we're tangibly going to see? I'm assuming that's the case.
Yeah, but I think that's
But I want to make sure, because otherwise I take these away and say, oh, Tampa did. They got rid of a $5 million contract next year. They get to protect another player in the expansion draft whose name's not Filppula. And so they did the best job at deadline day. Let me think for a second here. Montreal did the quantity over quality thing, but that's not to say Ben and Davidson might not help them a lot on the back end. Toronto got Boyle. Are we counting Boyle as part of it? Okay. So Boyle and Fair, but the Fair deal doesn't really do much other than give them a fourth-round pick and maybe a little protection in the expansion
draft. Just keep saying the names out loud, and then you'll look at them and say none.
Hey, Florida got Vanek, your favorite player. So I know Will wants to pick Florida because he loves Vanek.
No.
I think he calls Vanek I'm not even sure he calls him a bit piece.
No. Mike Backpox talks about drivetrain. He doesn't even have one.
Okay, hold on here. So Florida, Tampa, I like what Tampa did, but it doesn't help them now. They were offloading guys.
Ottawa?
Ottawa made minor moves, give a few. Boy, you might be right, but are we forgetting anybody? We got Ottawa, Montreal. Yeah. Buffalo didn't do anything. Boston. Maybe Buffalo is the answer.
Yeah, doing nothing.
Boston got Drew Stafford.
You know, which is a nice. It's a nice pickup for them. You know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that the Montreal, and even though I don't love what Montreal did, I think between Brandon Davidson and Jordy Benn, that there's a little boost coming for the Montreal D. And then, you know, they made a big deal getting the bigger guys up front. They're effectively fourth liners. But they didn't subtract anything that's going to hurt them either, I don't think. So I'll say Montreal. Bad answer, but...
Well, I mean, there's really no good answer the way it's all broken down.
Isn't that fitting for the way the division's been this year? I mean, isn't it fitting that...
Who's the favorite in the division?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we've talked about...
We had the discussion, too.
You'd rather finish second or third.
Who scares you in the Atlantic? Absolutely no one.
No.
No one in that metropolitan division is scared of anyone in the...
Not Columbus or the Rangers.
Jeff and I agreed, though. Tampa's a little bit sneaky.
They are.
They're coming
on. If they get 91 back and they can keep rolling, they could be...
Yeah. Yeah, and they're the one that they should have been there all year. And, I mean, Florida, you know, they won those five in a row, and everybody was like, oh, okay, here we go. They got Barkov. They got Bukestad. They got Huberto back. Everybody's firing now. They're all going good. And as quickly as they reeled off five in a row, they lost three or four in a row. And suddenly we're back into the vast morass that is the Atlantic Division.
Yeah, so, you almost don't want to win the Atlantic. And you would rather finish fourth in the Metro,
yes,
than third.
Yes. That's why when Columbus and the Rangers played last week and Columbus beat the Rangers like Ranger fans are like, yes, I'm not getting Pittsburgh in the first round, going through Washington in the second round. We're going through the Atlantic Division, baby.
Right, yeah.
But they're not, but we'll see where that goes. But
what did you make of the relatively quiet goaltending market? Considering all the names that were sort of being floated out there.
Not surprised. You know, in some ways, the surprise was that Bishop even moved. There's not been a goalie market this year. It doesn't exist.
That's a crazy element to your job. Eh? Sometimes the goalies, they go everywhere one summer.
Oh, the one time it was like goalie deal after goalie deal after goalie deal.
And then it dies down to nothing.
But in all year, and you know, we thought there was a goalie market because we thought LA needed a goalie back before, as soon as Quick got hurt. Oh, they better get, and then Budaj did a good job. And then just as Quick gets back and healthy, the time when you would think they would least need a goaltender, they go, we better grab Bishop.
Well, do you think that will change Vegas's approach to the expansion draft in terms of, I don't know, like I've been playing around with that machine, like on Cap Friendly, right, about who's going to be available. It doesn't look like there's going to be a lot of good forwards available. It looks like there'll be a lot of D and a lot of goalies potentially. How do you think they'll play around with what they could do?
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, a lot of it depends too. You know, will Marc-Andre Fleury make it to the expansion draft? He has to be protected. If he's on the Pittsburgh roster at the time of the expansion draft, he must be protected. Or go to him and say, will you waive to go? Waive your right to the no-move clause to be in the expansion draft. And I think that's an interesting one because I think he might consider that. He would have to weigh... Where might I end up this summer if I'm traded? Is it Calgary? Is it, you know, and what are my options in terms of if I go somewhere as part of a trade?
You can mail it in Vegas too for five more years.
Well, it's not so much mailing it in as but you know, he'd have to get his head around the idea of I'm going someplace where the job description changes from trying to win games to win the cup to not losing games badly enough and winning now and again, and yet maybe being the guy, because he's got a lot of personality. And you know, if Marc-Andre Fleury ended up as the goaltender for the Las Vegas Golden Knights or the Vegas Golden Knights, whatever the official name is, and that he have a real chance to be sort of the toast of the town, I think. I think with his personality in Vegas, that's an identifiable guy in terms of your marketing, you can have a lot of fun with.
Yeah, how important is that, Bob, in that market, do you think?
Sir, I think in the short term, it's really important. If you can't force it. You know, you can't take, you know, somebody in the expansion draft and say we're going to make you our marquee guy to build around, unless the guy's got a great personality and he's a half decent player. And Marc-Andre Fleury, I still think he's a good goalie. I still think he's, you know, he's more than capable. So I don't know if it'll ever get to that, or whether he likes the idea of taking his chances of ending up in Calgary or wherever else, whoever else is looking for a goalie prior to the expansion draft, because that's likely when he'd have to be traded.
With Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider, brought to you by Finance It. So the Leafs really didn't address their back end, Bob, and I mean, I think everybody agrees that that is a spot of need for them, but that's something you can do going forward, because it's still a bigger picture thing more than it is an immediate thing. But with where they sit now, the way that they play, because of who it is that they have, they're going to be right in it until the final week or two of the season, and it's going to sway one way or the other. Would you say you're confident that this team has the ability to make the playoffs, or do you see them falling just a little bit short?
No, I think they're right in the mix. You can make predictions all you want. I think they'll be right battling there right down to the final day, and there's not a lot to choose. Wouldn't surprise me if they made it. They've been good this year, and you get Marner back and healthy and generating what he can. Obviously injuries are a factor for everybody, but I think they've got it. You know, I think if I was going to err on one way or the other, I'd err on the 51% versus the 49% side of the making it.
I was going to ask you about Matthews, and actually, I don't think I want to ask you. It's just too contentious a topic. I was going to ask you to sort through the Calder and the Hart races. I just don't know how people are going to separate at the end McDavid, Crosby, Lion A, Matthews. Like, I can't recall races like this where almost impossible.
You're absolutely right. Look at the rookie one, for example. You know, I might take the easy way out and just say, who's got more goals? Who's got more points? And if Lion A in has the benefit, and right now I know there's a whole bunch of people driving on the parkway or the 407 or the 401, and they're saying empty net goals,
even strength goals too,
even strength goals, whatever.
Why do people care so much? They just make me sick.
I know, but it's like, and then it's the other part is Matthews maybe a more. Already a more well-rounded player, or early on, certainly a more well-rounded player. Yeah, he probably is. So I could play the center card if I really got into the nitty-gritty. I want to see. There's still a good chunk of hockey to be played, and they've really done an amazing job of almost matching each other step for step. Every time one guy looked like he was statistically pulling away from the other guy, it's like, oh, look at Matthews. He's way ahead of Line A. And then all of a sudden, Line A's like, hat trick, boom, you know, bunch of assists. And you look at the standings and it's like, oh, guess what? Now he's ahead. And then you think, if Matthews doesn't watch it, Line A's going to blow by him here with the goals. And then all of a sudden, it's like, boom, boom, boom. You know, three games in a row, Matthews is scoring. And you're like, oh, man, look, they both got 30. Imagine that.
Well, Line A scored 31. And then an hour or two later, Matthews potted 31.
It's like, you know, I think it was a Bugs Bunny Daffy Duck, where it was sort of like they sang a song where it was like, anything you can do, I can do better. And that's kind of what I feel like this one is.
Well, I don't remember what happened at that point, but how did I think Ovechkin got the Calder over Crosby. Do you remember that race?
What? He did, and I don't remember.
I don't know.
But, yeah, my memory sucks.
The other thing with Line A is I think he's the youngest regular in the league.
Yeah. And,
which,
you know,
is crazy.
And again, it's like whatever you're predisposed to think, you're going to come up with your rationale. Mm-hmm. So if you're a Jets fan and you like Line A, you're going to say that, you know, you're going to say that he's 18 years old. He's a year younger. If you're a Leaf fan, you're going to say Liney's got empty net goals. He's had Scheifele to work with. You know.
Well, you just know how this is going to go, Bob. Like in Winnipeg, if Matthews gets the Calder,
you're going to say the Toronto media.
Toronto.
Yeah, absolutely. And I started the year. It's too bad Marner got hurt because it would have been interesting to see what happens.
He could still catch up.
He still could. He could. At the beginning of the year, people said, who do you think will win the Rookie of the Year? And I know the popular choice was Matthews, especially after night one and he gets the four goals. And I said, I think Marner will win it. I think Marner, he's the guy that's going to get it. And if he hadn't got injured, point-wise, he would have probably been ahead of those other two guys. So then you get into the real nitty-gritty of, do you give it to the rookie with the most points? Do you give it to the rookie with the most goals? Do you give it to the rookie who...
Most fanfare?
What about Matt Murray?
The center. Yeah, and you know what? And I feel bad for Matt Murray, and I feel bad for Zach Werenski. Because in any other year, those guys are Calder Trophy worthy. And
winners.
And they're not... In my mind, they're not going to get a sniff in the top three because those other three guys are there. And you could say the same thing for Nylander and Tkachuk. Pale in comparison to what Matthews, Line A, and now we'll see what happens with Marner back full time. But
I think anybody looking at Matt Murray would still not view him as a rookie almost, even though he is, because of last year, the playoff run, the cup championship.
No, you're right. But you know what? The rules are the rules. People said that about Panarin last year. And there's even people now that are going to say, on that basis, the people in Columbus are going to say, oh, yeah, here we go. Where did Matthews play last year? Oh, he played in the Swiss League. He played a year of professional hockey in Switzerland. Yeah. Where did Line A play? Oh, he played in the Finnish League, a professional year of hockey before he got to the National Hockey League. Where did Zach Werenski play last year? Oh, for the University of Michigan. There's your Rookie of the Year. And, you know, so you can always go back and make that argument. But the end of the day, you shouldn't take into account their age or where they've played, because as long as they're not 25 years old and they're Calder eligible, it doesn't matter what leagues they played in if they're Calder eligible. Now, I will say, if you're having a tough time picking between two guys, and one's an 18-year-old rookie that came out of junior hockey, and the other guy's a 24-year-old like Panarin that played in the KHL for 4 or 5 years, if it were even, then I would say, if it was a dead heat, then you might err on the side of the 18-year-old. But when Panarin did what he did last year, I thought he was so much better than everybody else that you had to go with Panarin. And now you don't have, even the difference in age between Line A and Matthews is so insignificant, 1 year. They both played professional hockey last year in Europe, so you can't even use that as a separator anymore. As for the Hart, McDavid will win it over Crosby on the most valuable player argument. Crosby's probably the best player this year. And as I said, Burns might sneak in ahead of Crosby on the MVP to your team.
Well, why don't defensemen ever win? Like, Pronger was the last one, and then I think it was Bobby Orr.
Yeah, it takes a lot to knock the big boys out of the box.
I was actually shocked the year Pronger won the Hart Trophy. I think that was Jaromir Jagr's year where he was just outrageous.
I'll look it up.
That was a great Blues team, though. And then the playoffs came.
Yeah, and that was Jaromir Jagr before he became the darling of, you know.
You got the answer? Because we got a rock and roll, buddy.
Yeah, Jaromir Jagr. Wow, it was really close. So Pronger got 396 votes. Jagr got 395.
Yeah. So, see, and then that's obviously a case where Pronger was so good, and it was a horse race. It was a real horse race. And I'll tell you what, Burns is going to take a chunk of the vote, and make no mistake about it.
All right, my man. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks.
Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider, brought to you by Finance It, monthly payment plans for big dreams and everyday budgets. We got the three stars, the Leafs lineup contest. It's all ahead before 7 o'clock. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050. Scott MacArthur, Jonas Siegel, and the O-Dog Overdrive on TSN 1050. And listen to Overdrive every weekday for the Leafs lineup player of the day. And on Friday, call in with the names of all five players, and you could win two lower bowl tickets to see the Leafs and the Flyers on March 9th. So that would be 1 week from tonight at the ACC. The theme this week is players we think belong on the Toronto Maple Leafs. mid-90s all-grinder team. Today's player is Rick Natras. Rick Natras was...
He was a grinder.
He was a grinder, but he wasn't here very long, right?
No, I don't
think so. He came
in
the Gilmore trade, and then he was gone.
Basically, our whole list is guys with mustaches.
It works.
It works. I love it.
Ready for the three stars?
Fire it up, Scotty.
Let's do it.
Overdrive, three stars of the day.
Right, the Overdrive, three stars, brought to you by Babsox.
I'm going to kick it off. First star, Bob Miller, the broadcaster for the Los Angeles Kings. He's stepping down. He had some issues, but he's been there a long time. 45 years, I think, doing Kings game. He is the first star. Jonas, it's up to you to do the second star.
Can you imagine doing anything for 45 years?
Me?
Vin Scully called no, Dodgers games
I got 10
games
more left of me for this nonsense, and I'm out.
I'll go with Bobby Mack, I guess, as the second star. He was bringing the heat on Matthews and Laine. And he was fair, I think, for both sides.
Did he solve the McDavid-Crosby deal for you or no?
No. That's going to be hard, too.
All right. My third star's Masai Ujiri, president of the Raptors. I thought he was pretty honest about the whole Kyle Lowry deal. And Steve Phillips for bringing it from all the way down in Fort Myers where the Red Sox are
buddy
all of a sudden.
Pick. That's called a buddy pick.
Do you oppose?
No.
You're
like
a big
him.
Fan of him.
I is. He's one of my favorites.
There you go.
Still a buddy pick.
Well, sometimes you gotta pump the tires of the right people, you know?
I agree. Thanks for the ketchup, Scotty boy.
What are you going to do with that? You going to leave it here at work?
It's my new Stanley Cup.
There you go. You will never be ketchupless on a trade deadline or free agent frenzy day again.
I might heat up some nuggies tonight and have your ketchup with
There you
me.
Go.
I love you, man.
Jeff O'Neill, Jonas Siegel, Leafs and Kings tonight on TSN 1050.
Yes,
9 o'clock pregame with...
The Tat Man.
And Patrick O'Sullivan. Bonesy and Ralphie with the puck drop at 10:30. We'll do it again, 4 o'clock tomorrow.